Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. Online, that's bcfmradio.com. This week, Kalpna Wolf from the charity 91 Ways, looking at food in the city of Bristol and how it can bring people together. Then Eddie Clark from the Art Bar, about some talks going on later this week. And Sam Downey, looking at a strange charity called Happy Cities, which is supposed to make all of us happy without giving us any money to pay the rent. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk. And if you want to join in, I'll give details at the end of the show.
My name's Kalpna Wolf, and I run a charity called 91 Ways to Build a Global City. There are 91 languages spoken in Bristol. What I'm trying to do is bring those communities, 91 language communities, together, and we do that by sharing food.
How does that help then?
Well, what food does, it's like the hand of friendship. It allows people to come together without any agenda. And when people come together from all different backgrounds and they sit and they eat together, they can actually build that common ground that exists between us. It's a great way of actually getting people to talk, to relax, to get to know each other. And that's what I want to do. I want people to get to know each other and find that actually we're all similar. We've got so many things that are in common. And even if we have differences, those differences can be celebrated. They don't have to be treated as something strange or weird. But it's a way of actually gelling communities, crossing divides and breaking down barriers.
Well, we like to think of things like the Somali community. We've got West Indian community here in Bristol. But which are the biggest when it comes to food?
Oh, wow. I think each community would say that they're the biggest. It depends what you mean biggest. But in fact, you know, every single community has an affinity with food. Whether you're call yourself Bristolian and have been here for centuries, you will have the food that you have grown up with, that you eat, that you enjoy sharing with your family. Whether you're from Somalia, whether you're from Cornwall or Wales or Eritrea or India, all these communities, that's the one thing, that food is a common factor. It's the thing that actually can bring people together.
What is traditional English or Bristolian food then? Because I don't know if there's any of that left. They probably say Miss Millie's fried chicken.
Oh, no, they don't all say that. Well, traditional food is the food that you've eaten, that you've been brought up with. So I've done some work in Southmead with some groups, and they say it's the food that their parents used to grow after the war, and they used to then cook dishes together. And they may be what you call traditional dishes. They may be the roasts they still have, and they're still cooking roasts on a Sunday. There'll be the shepherd's pies. They've also now adopted, of course, many new dishes. So they do make a curry. And, of course, a lot of people who have been born here, many sort of have been here for a long time, they also might have had some affinity with India. So they're making curries as well. So it's not as clear-cut as you might think.
I suppose you could imagine almost one way to bring communities together to stop some of these far-right divides, this kind of thing, is to actually get the EDL eating Indian food. Is that feasible? Actually, I can imagine some of the EDL people, even though they're very racist, would actually go down the road to an Indian. This is almost like the start of realizing that what they're doing is wrong.
I think a lot of EDL supporters probably do eat Indian food, but they don't think about it. And the thing is that we often go into restaurants and we'll eat the food, but we don't really connect with the culture. So that's what we're trying to do. We're actually saying, come and taste the food, whatever background it is, and then learn about the culture, learn about the values that are attached to that food, learn about the people that come from that culture, learn about those people's stories. So it's much more than just going to a restaurant. And it doesn't matter what background you're from. And what I found that, you know, you might come in with a negative agenda, but you actually do, when you share food and you share stories, you share your memories, that actually negativity often turns into positivity. I've got so much faith in the ordinary person, ordinary human being. I've met most people are so decent. And when you bring them together, it's because they haven't had an opportunity to meet people.
One of the things they do say that any kind of country or community is in dire poverty, I mean, we've got this problem with food banks at the moment, and we're here to talk about food, that actually it's the fertile ground for fascism to start to rise, to actually set people against each other. So I suppose you're up against quite a problem there. What with austerity and the enormous great cutbacks in benefits in for disabled people, this kind of thing, it's creating this kind of tension, which sometimes turns into racism.
So I think what's happened in our society is that people, there are so many difficulties that people are facing, so many challenges. Those challenges come from poverty, they come from not being connected to the powers, they come from, you know, finding education opportunities difficult, jobs difficult, and so on. So what can happen is that then they are obviously in that challenge, they're thinking, well, where's the problem? Where's this problem coming from? And unfortunately, what happens, and it's not the man in the street or woman in the street, what's happening is that sometimes there are our so-called role models, if you like, come up with these almost, you know, they're creating divides. So what we need to do is we actually need to bring people together. And when you find that when people come together and eat, they actually realize that they are facing all the same challenges. You know, the people who are going to food banks, they're not of just one ethnic background. So many people are facing that. And when we do our events, people find that affinity. They say, well, actually, how can we help each other? They understand that. They really get a shared understanding.
So how does your charity work? Do you actually just sort of book a village hall or something, or community centre, and send out the invites?
We go to all communities, because in Bristol communities are quite segregated or siloed geographically. We go to them, and the first thing we do is try and find the key people in the communities, and as many people who will talk to us, either through the community centre or some central space. But we talk to them and say, look, what are your issues? So we don't go along and say, look, we'd like to do this. We say, look, what are your issues? What are the things that you'd like to do? And they're often very forthcoming. We do that in a very relaxed way. We often take food. We say, look, here, we're coming with some food. Will you come and talk to us? All we want to do is make the community better. All we want to do is make the city a better place for everybody. So then we get them to help us come up with an event, and then we co-create that event, and that's the way it becomes successful, really. Otherwise, we're just going in and imposing our ideas, and we don't know those communities. The people in those places who've lived there, who go in their everyday way, they're the ones who know. So that's why we have to talk to them first.
Well, it strikes me, I mean, if you go, for example, I was in Singapore recently, where they had 100 years ago an enormous problem with segregated communities living together. For example, they had a Chinatown, they've got a kind of Arab district, they've got a Malay district, they've got an Indian district, where all the ethnic groups were, like Bristol really, living in largely in separate areas. And then when they came along with their public housing program, they said, right, well, every single housing block is going to have an equal share of all these groups. So I wonder if you can see that sort of thing happening in Bristol, where there's genuine multiculturalism, because when communities feel that they're a little bit alienated, they do tend to stick together, don't they?
Yeah, people do tend to stick together. I think if there's any place in the country that it can work, I think Bristol is one of those, because actually on the ground, people do want to come together, even though in a way we've become geographically siloed. I think housing is a good way of doing this, but I think it's also about something about us making the effort as well, and that's what we're trying to do. And when people do that, when the people do actually actually come together, they really do make a difference, because people don't see all the differences. They see, you know, they go about their everyday lives and they see all the similarities. They're taking their children to school, they're going shopping, they're working, they're, you know, making sure they can get the bus home, and all those things that, you know, we are sort of consumed by day.
What's your ethnic group?
So my parents were from India, and I come from an Indian background. I was born in India.
Is there any particular type of Indian food that you really feel proud to serve up at these meals?
Yeah, well, I try and serve up something that has a memory attached to it, a story, so that I can be honest about what that food means to me, because that's what we're asking people to share with us. We say to them, tell us what you eat and what it means to you. So I come from a North Indian Hindu Punjabi background, and I love basic staple food. Actually, I love dal, rice, vegetables. I make paneer. I'm a cook anyway. I've written a cookbook, as you know. So I like to talk about those foods. And they're the foods that I grew up eating, that my parents used to cook. Sometimes I'll talk about a story that my mother, the foods that my mother made. And often I talk about the story of the foods that my father made with us, because he used to cook with us once a week. And we just loved the opportunity to have full attention with him, because he worked all week. So the five of us would hang around and say, yeah, you know, dad's going to show us how to make something that he really loved making, and that we would make that together and sit and eat that together. So, and his dish was a brantah. He used to make brantahs with I'd say probably about a ton of butter in, which we just adored.
What about foreign foods? I know you're not supposed to have favourites. You want to have everybody included, but what's one of your favourites of other ethnic foods?
I like I like all foods, but I love Middle Eastern food. I love Persian food.
Me too, yeah.
I love Persian food. You know, I'd love to be able to cook Persian food more. I like food. I love Mexican food. I mean, I can go on and on. And the thing is that, you know, we're so lucky, because I love Moroccan food. You know, our high streets are full of these foods, and particularly in Bristol, you know, the 91 language communities, we should be celebrating that diversity. And that's exactly what we're trying to do with our charity. And, you know, because every community is bringing so much to the city. It's bringing a language, it's bringing its culture, values, and it's bringing its food, and we've got to say that's a great thing.
Okay, so you've got 91 different languages. I don't know if that means 91 different types of food that you're making, but what about these different food types? Are you saying to people that if you want to learn about how to cook these foods, come along to one of our meals?
Some of our events, we will have a pop-up supper club, and so it'll be the cook from the community will cook, and will tell us why that food is so important to them, and also a little bit about how to make those foods. And other events, we'll ask people if they'd like to show us how to cook those foods. That's amazing. We just love that, you know, and we can share and cook. And some events, we will cook together, and that is really a great way of bringing communities together.
Kalpla, sounds what you're doing is great, wonderful, fantastic stuff. Look, what about your cookbook, though? Because I'm sure there'd be some people out there thinking, oh, this lady sounds like she knows about food.
My cookbook is called Spice Yourself Slim, and it's about health and spices. It's about creating wonderful delicious from around the world, actually. It's got Mexican, it's got Chinese, it's got Indian, it's got Middle Eastern recipes in, all using wonderful spices. I grew up using spices, and that's what my heritage is, and I've always been really interested in the power of spices in terms of health. And really that came from the fact that I just love eating spices. And of course, when you eat spices, we're really, really lucky that they're full of flavor, absolutely full of flavor, packed with goodness, completely natural. And they add so much to every single dish. And I'll tell you a little secret, they add no calories at all. So that's not bad, is it?
Okay, so for the 91 languages and your your food charity. How do people follow what you're up to and maybe even come along to one of your events?
91ways.org, www.91ways.org is our website. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter at 91ways, and we're on Instagram. Please, please, please like us. Please follow us. Please come to our events. We are trying to really make Bristol the most wonderful city that it could be, welcoming everybody. Every person who calls Bristol home is a person who is welcome, and we want to make sure that they're welcome and they're connected in this city.
So people search for 91 Ways, is it?
91ways.org.
And if they're not on the internet, they're going to have to knock on the next door neighbour and use their computer.
That is true. And I'm trying to think how else we could tell them. I mean, I can give you an email. That's also internet. Okay.
Just give an email address as well. Huh?
We have some flyers which I can leave, and we do put them in places like libraries, and we do put them around the city hall as well. So if you're going past those places, we do posters up. The other place to look at is look into your community centres, because when we're coming, we do quite a lot of flyers and we leave posters up. Also, if you would like to cook for us and join us, if you come from any community, we don't mind. We would love that. We'd love to hear your story. We'll put your story on our website. We'd love you to come along and tell us about yourself, tell us about your food memory, and just be part of things. It's just a great way of actually bringing people together. In our city, we have so many good things, but we also have people who are isolated. We do also have people who, would like to come to things. We welcome people at our events. So, you know, please come and share with us.
Okay, so just give us the email again.
Our email address is info@91ways.org.
So, Kalpana Wolf from 91 Ways, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Well, I'm joined by Eddie Clark from the ARC Community Centre, although it has been known as the Palestine Museum in the past, not this time. Eddie, you've got some events coming on over the next few days, which are starting with one about Grenfell Tower.
Yes, the local activists are incensed by the government treatment of both the residents, the fact that the government is culpable, really, of what we think is corporate manslaughter.
Well, I noticed one of the latest stories about this is that the government has now refused to pay for replacement of the poisonous cladding, this flammable cladding, which was giving out hydrogen cyanide. The government's now said, oh, well, you know, the local authorities are going to have to find the money for that themselves. There's going to be no government money for it.
But the point is that it's the government that's culpable. So in a way, it's just what they're doing. It's smoke and mirrors. They're just kind of like covering up the fact that they are responsible, not the local council.
So who is it locally that's getting annoyed about this?
Well, basically, it's a group of people that would be involved in many different, you know, aspects of injustice, and a group have got together, so they're just kind of ordinary people that are fed up to the teeth of what's happened to these
poor
people.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that the management of the refurbishment of this tower in London was carried out by this TMO, Tenant Management Organisation, which is a misnomer really, because there's only about a third or a quarter of the directors of these TMOs are actually tenants themselves. It's mostly non-executive directors and a councillors appointed from the local authority. So, even though they're called TMOs, and they obviously don't work, they're nothing really much to do with tenants. But here in Bristol, it was the Lib Dems very firmly that were pushing these in 2009 and 2010. A councillor called Mike Popham, who was a former squadron leader, and a woman called Cheryl Ann up in Horfield, who were very much pushing these, and they got government money to push TMOs. But fair play to them. I think a big round of applause, really, to Bristol tenants for rejecting TMOs at the time and saying, no, we don't think that these are competent to run our something like 30,000 homes.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, and it goes deeper than that. It's a clever way of the council, the local government, major government, of deferring responsibility. So this company that was supplying all of this kind of like almost kind of Kindle, supposed to be cladding, in effect are Australian-based. You know, they don't have a proven track record of a manufacturer in this country or any part of Europe. So we're talking about, again, that same old, you know, kind of old Powers Act, I think.
Harley Facades, very appropriate name.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, so when's the meeting?
The meeting's on 6 o'clock on the 5th of July.
That's Wednesday.
Wednesday, and that's at 27 Broad Street. That's BS1 2HG.
Okay, and you've got something else coming up on Saturday. What's that?
Yes, and on the 8th, which is the same time, 6 o'clock, we have what's called pinkwashing. We have Joe Biden from Brighton University, who is going to kind of like champion the local gay fraternity to take responsibility for what's happening in Israel.
Well, what's the connection?
Well, look, the connection is that one of the biggest gay parades is actually in Tel Aviv, and a lot of the people from here will be going there. And Joe wants to make sure that they understand exactly what their game they're playing. He calls it normalization of the occupation of what is an apartheid system. And it's easy for a hedonistic person to get on a plane, not see any apartheid, Palestine, parade on the beach, have fun, and then come back.
Well, there's been a lot of criticism of Radiohead, for example, for going over and playing there, but they're making money. I mean, people who are going to the Tel Aviv Gay Pride aren't.
Well, that's true. I mean, if they feel that they don't have to worry too much about, you know, the moral issues, then good, that's fine. I mean, we're not condemning anybody that wants to go there. We just want to make sure they're conscious, you know, that they could make a different decision if they knew more of the truth. So this is really about making them aware. If they take responsibility once they know this knowledge, then so be it. But it's not really pointing a finger at them. It's just wanting to kind of educate them, really.
Well, there's a Holy Land grab been going on there, hasn't there?
Well,
since 1967, the Holy Land grab.
That.
What
yeah.
is this?
Yeah.
Well, what is it all about?
It's just a way of actually, you know, obviously Israel's a very powerful player. They have endless money. And
from America?
Yeah, with America backing them.
See, if the Americans
were to
turn off that tap, maybe the Israelis would behave.
I don't think it would make any difference. I think they're highly solvent. I don't think it would make any difference, to be quite honest. You know, I don't think they need...
Anyway, so what is pinkwashing? What's it got to do with this parade in over in Tel Aviv?
Well, basically, it's to say, if you're going to go to Israel, much in the way as Radiohead are going to play in Tel Aviv, we're saying that while you're entertaining the Israelis, you're ignoring the plight of the Palestinians. In effect, what you're doing, you're endorsing the occupation.
Okay, so it's Wednesday, that's 6 p.m. on the 5th of July, about Grenfell Tower, and on Saturday, that is the 8th of July at 6 o'clock, both in the same place, which is where?
27 Broad Street in the city centre. It's BS1 2HG.
Eddie Clark, thanks very much for joining us.
And a pleasure, and thanks for all the good work you do, Tony.
On Dialect, cheers. That's all for this week. Dialect's Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Kalpner Wolf from 91 Ways, the food charity, from Eddie Clark at the Bristol Art Bar on Broad Street, and Sam Downey, looking at happy cities. Also to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialect's a Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street. Phone numbers 0117 909 6897. Or online there, prsc.org.uk. You can also contact us via the National Volunteering website, because Volunteering Bristol, here with us since the 1970s, has just been cut by Marvin Rees, the mayor. The National Volunteering site is do-it.org, where you can volunteer for almost anything, almost anywhere. do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
to ladies' men. Always greet with a kiss on the hand. Protects us all at the ready to answer a call. In his own special way, he's gentle and kind. Of oppression he hates, love in his eyes. My heart keeps a beat when I'm by his side. He's a spacer, a star chaser, a spacer. He's a spacer, a star. Trust everyone that you meet. I'm so lucky.